All right. So, things about time we get started with the talk. And the focus of the talk today is connected to the theme for the annual focus for Seattle Insight this year, which is the Four Noble Truths and the Four Insights. Right? Hi, Nina. Great meta to you as well. The Four Noble Truths and the 12 insights. And to set the scene, I'll start with a quote from the Buddha a few weeks after awakening when he met with the five ascetics. And there's a lot of long-term practitioners here, so this is very familiar to you. And if it is, just consider it a gentle refresher. So here it goes. This is the truth of suffering. Birth is suffering. Aging is suffering. Illness is suffering. Death, so much death around the world, is suffering. Association with the disliked is suffering. Separation from the liked is suffering. Not getting what one wants is suffering. In brief, the five aggregates subject to clinging are suffering. That's from his first sermon, written in the Samyutta Nikaya 56:11. Everything is suffering. Everything dependently originated is suffering. So, what I'm going to attempt to do today is using the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, which is the first sermon, and the 12 insights as well as Samadhi, try to weave through some understandings of what the Four Noble Truths are, and some difficulties in sustaining our awareness of the 12 insights aligned to the Four Noble Truths. Does that sound like a good use of time? Yes? All right. It's a lot of people on without cameras, but I assume so. So I want to start with why it is easy to forget the Four Noble Truths and 12 insights, just to get that out of the way. The first reason is the power of habitual delusion. So the Buddha described avijja, ignorance, as the fundamental cause of our inability to perceive reality as it is. Therefore, we forget the nature of reality. And in that forgetfulness, ignorance manifests as habitual patterns of misunderstanding and craving, which cloud our ability to remember the Four Noble Truths. Buddhaghosa, who wrote the Visuddhimagga, stated, and this is sort of a Buddhist psychology perspective, ignorance is like darkness, obscuring what's already present. Without the light of mindfulness and concentration, the truth remains hidden. So you can see the power of habitual delusion continues because when we are caught in the automatic reactivity of craving and aversion, our habitual patterns override our capacity to see clearly. So that's the first reason why it's easy to forget. The second reason is the overwhelm of modern life. Because after all, although most of this emerged 25, 2600 years ago, we live in 2025. Maybe there's some time travelers here, I don't know, people who astral travel. But in today's world, distractions abound. It's the norm. And this is from the endless pool of our digital devices to the demands of work and family. It's so easy to become lost in external responsibilities and lose insight of our inner truths. So, what's the evidence? So, a research study by the Pew Research Center found that on average, most people spend 7 hours on digital devices, 7 hours at the minimum. That's on average. So what is the possibility for samadhi, for focus, which is necessary for successfully remembering the Four Noble Truths? Then the third reason is the mind's resistance to discomfort. Because the Four Noble Truths ask us to confront directly, and the mind often resists this. It resists the encounter with the reality that there is suffering, because it's caught up in the trying to escape that reality. Because the mind seeks comfort and distraction rather than facing the reality that all things are impermanent, all things are unsatisfactory, and there's no permanent self. So Ledi Sayadaw, who I greatly like to study, said, you know, this Burmese Theravadan master, the mind is conditioned to seek pleasure and avoid pain. So without mindfulness and concentration, it flees from the very truths that lead to liberation. Then the fourth reason for why it's easy to forget the Four Noble Truths and the 12 insights, which I'll cover very shortly, is craving, tanha. Craving, tanha. Because craving is a powerful source of suffering and a powerful force that keeps us entangled in delusion. Then of course, the final or the fifth reason is the subtle nature of insight. The truths of the Four Noble Truths and the 12 insights are very subtle, very, very subtle. There is suffering, and it requires a calm, concentrated mind to perceive. And in contrast, the distractions and cravings of modern life are loud, immediate, and attention-grabbing. So it is no surprise that we steer away from the recognition that there is suffering. That's the first insight. And the second insight is suffering should be understood, but how can a distracted mind understand suffering? I mean, look at the news today. So when you look at the news headlines, right? When I say Luigi is now a thing. That's what's on the news. So you see the stories of Luigi. Then you hear about the stories of the drones over New Jersey and other states and now overseas as well. Drones! Drones in the airspace. Then UAPs coming out of the ocean. This is on in the news. This is not from Alex Jones and Prison Planet. Then you have January 10th coming up. This is where the president-elect gets convicted, although there is no chance of him going to prison from what is said. And of course, there's a big rally planned in Washington, D.C. on the 17th and the 18th. And then there's a massive Trump rally on the 19th, the day before the inauguration. 10th, 17th, 18th, 19th, 20th. Then you have powerful celebrity figures who are now subject to unbelievable criminal persecution. And it's not the first time it's happened, but not at the scale where the implication brings down the entire revered celebrity culture. So for the generation, my children, my son who's almost 19, there is no celebrity culture. Who are these people? I mean, there was a time for Elizabeth Taylor and Kirk Douglas and Denzel Washington. Today, the celebrities are those who are telling the truth on TikTok. Not Mr. Rogers. I mean, I hope I'm not just entertaining myself. Now, if you see a Cybertruck in traffic, what's the immediate illusion? Explosion! This is what's happening to your righteous mind. My righteous mind. So it's no surprise that we forget the Four Noble Truths. And this is about remembering. Remembering. How do you remember? One perspective is samadhi. So when you think about the Noble Eightfold Path, wise effort, wise concentration, wise mindfulness. Impossible to sustain a practical awareness unbroken of the Four Noble Truths dealing with contemporary life. And we are all in different stages in our lives. Some are empty nesters. Some are just beginning. Some have children. Some have grandchildren. We're all in different phases. But the reality is, no one here escapes suffering. Not you, Sue. You can't escape it, Sue. Lyndall, try. In contemporary context, that takes you away from samadhi. So the revolution here is samadhi. And I'm just focusing on that because it's a focus on remembering. You see, in my own life, when I started to embrace the truth and the reality of the science of mind of the Four Noble Truths, immediately my second marriage crumbled. Why? Because I started to see things as they were. How did I miss this? I was deluded, distracted, I forgot. And when I saw the reality as it was, not how I imagined it to be, change was inevitable. And although I feel the freedom from that, during the holidays, I missed hearing the footsteps of children giggling and laughing and running around. Once again, also, fully embracing the Four Noble Truths revealed to me my entire life of dealing with narcissistic abuse trauma from my parents. Where did they get it from? Their parents. Where did their parents get it from? Their parents. Where did the National Institute of Health says the trauma gene is passed on seven, or suffering is passed on 7 to 14 generations. So that's your two parents, your four grandparents, the 8 before, the 16 before, the 32 before, the 64 before, the 128 before, the 256 before, the 512, 1,000 people who could not remember the nature of reality. That's the privilege we have. And when I started to confront the reality of my trauma, that also led to a disattachment of the relationship I had with my parents. How? I'm telling you the truth of my experience. And I still grieve that to this day. But I don't grieve the suffering. I grieve latent elements of the attachment. That includes my three siblings. My loved siblings. We have psychic jokes. We love each other, I thought. But when I came out of the delusion because of the embrace of the Four Noble Truths, even my siblings had to go. With love and compassion. Because I suffered then. And the suffering from being attached to trauma and toxicity certainly less than the suffering of grieving, because what I was grieving is the attachment, not the freedom from that suffering. So, with the nature of suffering, knowing that no one escapes suffering, how does it end with you? How does suffering end with you? And here we have the 12 insights. And the 12 insights state that there is suffering. It's a fact. And if you want to be free from it, the second insight says you must understand the nature of suffering. That suffering has to be understood. Third insight. Then the fourth insight is the origin of suffering is craving. Attachment, which is different from love and joy. Attachment is a delusion of permanence. Permanence of things dependently originated. Like my marriages, like my family relationships, like the previous career, and I had blue chip careers that I had to let go to follow a path of healing. I went to the Gates Foundation. That's what brought me to Washington State. And I was so caught up there. I like having the business card that said Gates Foundation. I like the card that says World Bank. I like the card that said Deloitte. I like the card that said Microsoft. But there wasn't alignment. And when I started to come into alignment by embracing the Four Noble Truths, the things that no longer aligned to that fell out of range. Everything. The fifth insight, craving should be abandoned. Sixth insight, craving has been abandoned. And then it starts to get very hopeful. Seventh insight, there is the ending of suffering. Eighth insight, the ending of suffering should be realized. Ninth insight, the ending of suffering has been realized. 10th insight, it is the Noble Eightfold Path. 11th insight, and thus I focus on Samadhi. 11th insight, this noble truth should be penetrated by cultivating the path. 12th insight, this truth has been penetrated by cultivating the path. That's the science of mind that the Dalai Lama talks about. So you realize that anything that induces suffering first makes contact with the mind. And hence, the mind is the most fertile ground for all who seek to get us to act in a certain way. Now there's a recognition that there's peak hate in the world. I'm sure some of you have seen, I don't watch much television, but my son's here, so we watch some sports. And I saw a, I think it was an NFL or NBA ad on Stop the Hate. Has anyone seen that? Stopping the Hate is now a commercial news story. It's been advertised. Stop what hate? So if it's been acknowledged mainstream, then you know what is happening. Everyone here is affected by all the things that I mentioned. I see it in your faces. Not to mention what you're affected by in your individual movie called your life. This is the collective energy of where we are. So you realize that the most radical thing you can do is win back your mind. Because that's where the battle of suffering is waged. If advertisers want you to buy something, where do they attack? Your mind. Because without 80% consumer spending, there's no United States economy. That's why every month there's something. It's Christmas, it's Thanksgiving, it's President's Day, it's Labor Day, it's summer holiday, it's this day, it's that day. Spend. Cash, money. Where does that education happen? Prefrontal amygdala, all here. Your stem, this is the place. If somebody wants to manipulate you, where do they plant the seed? With weird spells. So if you are not focused on the awareness of what's happening here, that's the most revolutionary thing you can do now. And again, this is one person's perspective, so you can disregard this if it's meaningless. The mind. The mind. This is neuroscience. This is brain science. That's what the Dharma is. And if you were to examine right now what's distracting you, it's all in the mind. It's the second arrow. The first arrow, pain is inevitable. Second arrow, suffering is the hot sauce or the sriracha we add to the first arrow. And there are many second arrows in our now time. And all these second arrows are designed to take you away from your equilibrium, which is the recognition of suffering and the truth of suffering and the path to ending suffering, which is rooted in morality, concentration, and wisdom. How do you become a moral person in times of less moral turpitude? How do you become a concentrated person in an era of great distraction? How? How do you gain wisdom in a time when our genius is being put to sleep? I don't know if any of you saw the movie Idiocracy that came out 20 years ago with Matthew Perry or Luke Perry. It's a movie set in the future where people are so divorced from their reality. When you listen to the top charts, all the music had imperceptible words. It was screaming and yelling. No words. Idiocracy. Where does it happen? Right here. Because anything that's planted here becomes real. It's all magnetic. It's all electromagnetic. So even the recognition of suffering, the causes of suffering, and the ending of suffering is also electromagnetic. As Thoreau would say, there's what you do with the Dharma and what the Dharma does, the electromagnetic side of the Dharma. Those are my words for now, electromagnetic. Many synonyms for that. So you realize that suffering persists when we forget the nature of reality. And how do you sustain not forgetting? Of course, the medical reasons why people forget. But beyond that, if you have the capacity to, this is about remembering what awareness we are connected to, the awareness within, the unfabricated. Especially in a time now where most people don't stand a chance. And in us embodying the truth of the Four Noble Truths, embodying it, do we not become examples for the world around us? Do we not become positive memes? Because the whole idea of memes comes from mimetics, which is rooted in virology. So bad news travels faster, but there's an opportunity for good news to travel because everyone, look around, and I don't have any data or evidence, just my intuition. Everyone is on the precipice of what's going to happen next. I know what's going to happen next. What's going to happen next is the unknown. The unknown is where all the magic happens. where one can embrace reality as it is. And in that, there is transformation. That's the ultimate resistance. Winning back your mind. That's the point of this practice, if I may submit that today. So anything that takes you away from focus, from focusing on the truth of reality, is what we're coming up against. And we have the tools, the privilege of the tools, and the Buddha's example, and the examples of members in the Sangha who are already arahants or once returners or never returners. The bodhisattvas here, the bodhicittas here. This is the point of Sangha. That as we embody, remembering that there's an electromagnetism in that, that enables others who are oriented to remember too. Not by preaching, but by embodiment. You see? I want to thank you for your kind attention. And any shortcomings or limitations in this talk are mine and mine only. But I implore you, before we move into the breakout rooms, to remember. Remember the nature of reality. Sustaining the kind of awareness that eventually becomes unbroken. I remember a wonderful teacher I really respect and who precepted me, a monk, Bhante Buddharakita, would often say to me that it's important on this path, and these are words you all know, to start and continue. And if there's any lack of sustenance in that, to begin again and begin again. And begin again. And begin again. And in constantly beginning again, soon there's an unbroken chain of sustained awareness. That's the noble path. Thank you for your kind attention. Before we move into groups, if anyone wants to move on, this is your time to do so. And we thank you for joining and appreciate your kind attention. And we're going to move into rooms now. Welcome, welcome, welcome back, welcome back. Hopefully your discussions were illuminating, and I'm curious if anyone wants to share from your perspective. We're only sharing from your perspective. If you want to go for it, just jump in or raise your digital hand. We'll just take a few minutes for this.
I'll jump in.
Yes.
I really enjoyed that breakout. It was helpful to kind of consolidate my thoughts on the talk, which was wonderful. Thank you. Very powerful. And made me, you know, motivated me to do a deeper dive into studying the Four Noble Truths. You know, you can never hear it enough. And as I was saying in the beginning of our breakout session, that you know, it's not about it's just as you progress in your, as you deepen your practice, you perceive things at a more subtle level, right? And the words may be the same, but your perception, your understanding is different. So it's really helpful to be reminded of that.
No, you said it well. And I think what you're pointing to, Phil, is the notion of always being a beginner, because there's always something else to unfurl. Indeed. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Maybe one or two others.
Yeah, I'll say something.
Yes.
I was thinking about remembering and how in all of the spiritual traditions I have been involved with, it's always about remembering, always. And I was thinking about the Sufi practice of dhikr, which means remembering. Yeah, and it's a very powerful practice. And here it is again, remembering who and what you are, remembering what reality is. Yeah, it all comes down to that. And the first time I heard that, it was kind of revolutionary. It was like, oh, this isn't actually something I have to attain. No, this is just something, it's already there. I just have to remember it.
Exactly. I mean, that's so profound, because unreality feels so real because of the practice of unreality, and then moving to reality is such a shift. And it doesn't seem like a place to go, because there's nothing to be, there's everything to unbecome. I think that's what you're pointing to, Judith. Thank you. Thank you. Hey, maybe one other. Hand raised. Oh, Marianne, please go for it. Yeah. On your mute. Oh, can't hear your insights here.
Sorry.
Oh, there we go. There we go.
All right. I wished you said more about what your recognition of trauma in your past, how that changed your life. And I, after years of practice, suddenly came up against really realizing the trauma. I grew up with a narcissistic, shall we say, one autistic parent, one Freudian analyst parent, and I said, and who just traumatized me to death. And it really is a wake up about how triggered I still am on my practice, even after decades. And we need a PTSD group.
That's really powerful what you said, because that was my suffering, right? Not even realized, because I had become adaptive and normalized. This is the way
Yes.
it is, and suffering, I guess, is supposed to be bad, and I guess I'm cursed, and I'm second class, and okay, I guess I give to everybody and I don't get anything in return. And all of that was rooted in the programming. The programming happens mentally from mouth to ear, right? Usually. So that's the if I may use some non-dharmic words, that's the sorcery, the abracadabra, the magic of shifting the person's insight that puts them down a path of unreality. And so what I realized, Marianne, is that I've been living on unreality, a delusion that was part of my spiritual slavery. You heard the words, my spiritual slavery. And so the Dharma woke me up from that delusion that, no, that's not my reality. That was conditioning. That was fabricated. And how has it changed me? In every way. I'm better in every way. I am better in every way. Yet the price that one paid for this recognition is the reason why a lot of people, I think, get married to their trauma and their delusions. Because, as Judith was saying, you have to remember, and remembering is the natural state, because you forget. And remembering requires looking at things that a lot of people may not have the courage to do, or the wherewithal to do. And so, the movement from the known to the unknown is not for the faint of heart, Marianne. I think I'm looking at you and I'm seeing this, you're recognizing, because I can sense the empathic nature of your power. But anyway, it's a long conversation. That's what I can say. It changed me in every way, and such a huge price to pay, but worth the price of admission, in simple terms, if I can say that.
I mean, it's a fine line between a bodhisattva path and a repetition of the imprint of that kind of background.
Exactly right. It's the same thing. It's like the saying goes, the very glib cliche saying, if you don't think you can do it, you're right. If you think you can do it, you're right. That's how powerful we are. That's how powerful this thing is. This thing, you see. So anyway, maybe one more. Thank you, Mary. That's pretty powerful. And then I'll move to Meriton announcements. Anyone else want to jump in? All right. So a couple of quick announcements on Dana volunteering, and then we'll close with Merit. So, as you know, SIMS is largely volunteer-led, and the sustenance of the organization is based on volunteers freely giving, most of you who already do that. And what's different in how we're looking at volunteering, making that messaging more apparent, is volunteering is actually a key part of Dana. It is a way to give back, to sustain. It's a key part of your practice. And so if you're available to volunteer, or you volunteer in the past and you're not volunteering now, you'd want to, feel free to let us know via the volunteering tab at Seattle Insight. That's something that we would highly encourage you to orient towards if you feel predisposed to. And then on Dana, Sims and his teachers freely offer the teachings of the Buddha to all, regardless of ability to pay. We appreciate your generosity and Dana today. Many thanks to the Dana you've already offered to Sims, as well as our various teachers. Certainly, you can offer us Dana at the seattleinsight.org website. All right, so now we're going to wind down with Merit. If anyone has any person or groups of people you want to offer Merit to, you could just type it in the chat or unmute very quickly. Anyone? Merit? Or you can think it energetically, that's good enough too. May the merit of our practice this morning be shared by all beings so that they may be free, remembering that our work is never for ourselves alone. May we, you, all beings be safe and protected from harm. That's our sit today at our session. Thank you so much. And if you want to unmute and say goodbye, please do so. And see you next week. Thanks all.